one of those podcasts we talked about, the guy who recorded the album that was all silence. Do you remember that?
It's funny. I don't know why. I was listening to that like a month or two
I was
ago.
Too.
That was really funny. The album that's always playing.
That was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
Do you feel like we should do that?
Just a podcast on silence? It would be interesting because but the only way it could possibly be interesting is that if we had people who were who knew what we were doing, mm-hmm. deliberately doing a podcast on silence, mm-hmm. and deliberately like listening to it,
yeah,
to see what their inner experience would be like, and then to share their feedback and see,
right,
what that would be like. That would be cool.
Like a contemplative sit.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of the I had told you a couple months ago that I don't know what church that is.
Was it a Mennonite church? Or Quaker church?
Yeah, Quaker church. Yeah. Quaker, where their church services, a majority of their church services, are just where they get together in silence. I just thought that that was the most awesome thing.
Yeah, wow. Man.
That's a cool thing. But yeah, that would be very strange in theory to do a podcast on silence, but would also be very interesting to see what would happen if people were listening to that and then kind of reported back on their mm-hmm. inner experience of that, you know, because, you know, there's in that silence, right? There's just constant communication going on. We get really, really seduced by words. Mm-hmm. And thoughts, right? And body language, concepts. We get seduced by that, and rightfully so, right? Like that's our main way of communicating. But mm-hmm. really, in essence, that's in some ways, you know, you could look at it as that's only a small percentage of what's being communicated. There's this whole other dimension that seems more subtle, mm-hmm. It's more like energetic. There's this communication happening that and I heard a quote that I really liked, and the quote is that the power is in the subtle, mm-hmm. and I love that because I think it is so true. You know, mm-hmm. so
there's someone in the parking lot that I think is yelling the F word while you talk about that.
Right?
Yep, for sure. Yep, seduced, confirmed.
Right, seduced by language. Right.
He's not so subtly communicating.
He's comfortable with the energy of anger in his body, and he's expressing it, right? Probably listened to our podcast last week.
He probably did, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We should congratulate him.
Okay, let me introduce the podcast. This is a Single Tree podcast. This is episode 56. We are going to talk a little bit about, or maybe a lot about, meditative state, which silence can be helpful in entering into. And I was thinking maybe we might do each other a lot more good by just sitting in silence with one another, whether that be on a podcast or in therapy, you know. So
that's one of my favorite parts about our friendship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, same.
It's that I've always felt comfortable being quiet around you.
That's good.
Right? Because I can't have very high expectations around Joel because he didn't talk much. But no, I'm just kidding. I don't either. No, but I think it you know, while we're talking about that, like, when we first started hanging out and spending time together, I don't think that I consciously recognized that. Mm-hmm. But that definitely resonated in my nervous system. Mm. You know, that there was some sort of maybe harmonizing going on that felt safe and good to my nervous system, that you were a nervous system that I could do that around. Mm-hmm. It felt safe.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was, you know, that's become one of my favorite parts of, you know, our friendship. Speaking of trauma and the nervous system, like we've been talking about, right? Like that. What we're talking about relates for sure.
Yeah. Same here. I was probably back in the day when I talked even less than I do now.
Yeah.
But which people might not believe because they're, you know, they're listening to our podcast and I have to talk.
Yeah. That's true.
Which is, you know, unfortunate in many ways, but yeah, it is nice, those relationships where you can just be.
There's a term by Thich Nhat Hanh. He calls it interbeing.
Oh yeah?
I love that.
I like that.
You know? Where two people are sharing a space. And they can be talking, also not talking, and there's just this interbeing, right? That idea is that beingness is the most natural thing that we do. We don't even do it. We are that, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the same way of thinking about breathing. We don't have to think about breathing, right? We don't have to think about being. So it's just, but there's this interbeing, which is a pretty cool thing.
We interrupt it with our words.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who is it that says a man ceases to be at peace with his thoughts that when he's speaking? Or it's the other way around?
I've never even heard that, but I like that.
Yeah, because I feel like we're meeting usually every couple weeks or whatever. Now we're just podcasting, but, you know, it's kind of nice to not feel like you need to say anything, you know, or just to really, like, sit with each other and be thoughtful before you speak. And I could probably do that for longer than I usually do it, like, sit in silence with someone else. Probably would be more useful than just jumping right into the talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, more and more, you know, in my in my clinical work, I'll have really invite people to, and at first it's a conscious thing, right? I have to do it through words, where I'll talk to them about, you know, while you're exploring your experience in here, pay attention to your body and when you might want to just be quiet for a minute. You know, because people come into therapy with this idea that they need to be talking, right? Talking mm-hmm. about their experience the whole time. Mm-hmm. And what's been cool is that, you know, after that initial discussion that I'll have with clients, when they let themselves, and I think it takes a little bit of time and exploring, but, you know, they'll really let them, you know, they'll be talking about their experience, and then it's like their body starts to kind of give them signals that maybe let them know that they want to kind of slow things down or be quiet. And, you know, I'll have some clients who will go, you know, anywhere from 2 to 10 minutes just kind of being quiet after, mm-hmm. you know, after they've said something or, you know, mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool to talk to people about what's happening there mm-hmm. when they're letting themselves do that. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot there. There's a lot happening. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I need to do that. Kind of set the tone and say, like, it's okay for you just to be silent. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times we're breaking the silence because it's like for the other person, you know, to make sure that they know that you're connected. And when you might actually prefer to be thoughtful or mm-hmm. meditative. So therapy can be like a group, like group meditation a little bit, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've even kind of like when my clients are in those spaces, you know, I'm in that space as well. Not only just in my own self, but just kind of, mm-hmm. merged in that space that they're at, and you know, there's this interbeing, right? There's this communication mm-hmm. going on, that subtle kind of processes, you know. And
you're getting the vibrations.
Yeah, and sometimes you can, you know, when you can tune into that a little bit, sometimes you can even have hunches of, you know, about things without them even saying anything, and mm-hmm. there's this harmonizing that can happen, but it's pretty cool, mm-hmm. you know?
So, you know, we do everything backwards, but where this comes from, you know, is, or, you know, maybe it's just kind of a connected thing, but we've been talking in the previous episodes about how basically everything that we are, human experience is really like the way we have organized ourselves around our environment, you know, adaptive sort of resilient responses to stress and trauma and just everything in our environment, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of depathologizing that, and it's really important for us to know that it's not, there's no reason to think of that as bad, or to think that you've done something wrong. Because you have adapted to your environment, that's what you were supposed to do and needed to do.
Right. Good. Part of what we're talking about is how that's literally nature happening.
Yeah.
We don't blame trees for losing their leaves during fall. Uh-huh. Right? We don't blame nature for adapting. Our bodies and our nervous systems literally are nature, and it's adaptive. Nature is adaptive. So what, you know, one of the things we've been trying to say is, you know, think of your body and your nervous system in that way.
Yeah, and so, and everybody, that happens for everyone. You know, we've all kind of responded to our environment and become who we are because of it. Mm-hmm. And those things happen automatically. That's part of what we were saying the last time, is that they happen without our conscious awareness, right? Yeah. They happen subconsciously, because it's kind of at the organism level, your body, or it's nature happening. You're adapting to what's happening around you. Mm-hmm. And those things happen automatically, and then they kind of organize themselves as who you are or how you hold yourself in the world, mm-hmm. right? Around other people. And so when you are around people, which most of us are all the time or frequently, you might be doing some of those, enacting some of those responses. Enacting is not the right word, because you're not really doing it on purpose. It's just happening.
Yeah.
Right? And so those things are happening in you in response to people. They are the things that keep you safe, help you survive, and help you feel regulated. And so, you know, we're talking about healing, or how you can change some of those things, right? And one of the ways that you can, one of the only ways that you will be able to change, is if you slow your experience down enough to where you can become aware, present to, is what you were saying the last time, mm-hmm. present to those responses, and just kind of become curious about them. You might become aware of how you've arrived at those responses. Mm-hmm. Maybe some, you know, fear. There may be some fear there that you could notice. But the whole, you know, exercise of slowing down and becoming present to those things is probably what we should be doing in therapy. You know what I mean? So we're talking about therapy as kind of a meditative experience. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I started thinking about this was because, you know, like I try to have my own meditation practice or whatever, which is feeble and not, it is what it is. It's just kind of, I try. But like, then if I practice that well, or, you know, if I'm practicing it regularly more, it's probably more important to practice it regularly than to do it well, then you kind of carry your meditative presence or way of being around all the time, right? And, mm-hmm. and, you know, why not? I mean, and with one other person, it's not, you know, you can be in a similar space, right? And mm-hmm. if we intend to do that, like when we're in therapy, then it gives opportunity for you to slow down long enough and be kind of in a safe space. And then you can, because some of the things that happen, like if I'm in meditation, are like creative thought, right? Or it kind of is born out of that silence, because I'm not doing my same responding to my environment all the time, right? Which is how I am always protecting myself. It is also a way of removing that membrane between conscious and subconscious in some ways, because you're not always protecting yourself from those deeper like things that you have been avoiding, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. your whole life is built around avoiding.
Yeah. And your nervous system's always doing that, right?
Yeah.
And what you're saying is that if you can kind of find ways that feel right and true and good for you to kind of slow it down a little bit, there's this kind of expansiveness where mm-hmm. there's kind of this whole other dimension of being to kind of explore, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. I kind of, you know, when you said one of the main ways that we can go about kind of exploring these things is to slow down and be present to what's going on in our body or our nervous system. And, you know, I kind of use the analogy of like, you ever been in a situation where you heard something in the background, and oftentimes it can be at night, like when you're sleeping or something, or it can be like out in the woods, you know, when it's dark. But when we're like, we hear something and we can literally in our body feel ourselves getting really quiet and still inside and really listening, you know, mm-hmm. out for listening for a sound. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's
yeah. Yeah. A few nights ago, we heard some owls in our backyard. And of course, I was like, turn the TV down. Everybody listen.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? You know.
Yeah. And then everyone's like,
yeah.
You get really quiet inside, right? And you're just like really listening for something, right?
Yeah. And then like 10 seconds go by and nothing. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, it's not going to happen. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then it happened.
Yeah. Okay, right.
But yeah, that's a good way to explain it.
Yeah, so this is...
Quiet your nervous system enough.
Yeah, we're not talking about a state or an experience that no one can relate to. What I would say is that everyone has... an experiential understanding of what I'm talking about. Everyone has had a time or an experience in their life where they've gotten really kind of quiet inside to listen, like for a sound or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what that feels like. So
yeah, man, that's it.
Then it's just like, okay, well, maybe there's some value in doing that every once in a while. Mm-hmm. That's it, really.
For sure. My spending time in silence and meditation has been pretty fruitless lately. Which, you know, it's kind of frustrating, but...
Fruitless, like in what way?
Well, I mean, I can only hold it in contrast with the other times that I do it when it feels fruitful, which is like...
What's the difference?
Yeah, good question. When I practice it and it feels really good, I feel like this real state of resonance with everything.
Huh.
I feel like presence, right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which is another term that I use for God.
Uh-huh.
But it's also like this very diffuse thing that's like, feels like spirit and also like the universe. And mm-hmm. when it works, I shouldn't even say that. That's so naughty. But like... I just feel like in tune. Right? That mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah. Like an expansive, unitive kind of space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't work very well, or I should stop saying works, but when it doesn't go very well from my subjective experience of it, it's like I'm just sitting here in silence.
And there's this, the energy in your body is different.
Yeah, it's just kind of like it's probably because I'm distracted. But also, like, I don't know. I feel like the universe doesn't really owe me that. It's just kind of... I think it's helpful with meditation that you just show up repeatedly to it and practice it even if it's not working, quote unquote working. That's why I think that's a bad word to use. Because we think it's supposed to work, right? But that's not a helpful stance to have toward the universe. Like it owes me peace.
Right. Like I'm doing this thing to get this experience.
Right.
And when that experience doesn't happen,
yeah,
then something's wrong or it's not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as you practice this, people, just don't think too much about it. You know, like you can really think, oh, I must be doing something wrong or whatever, to, mm-hmm. that I'm not getting into the right experience. Which, that's why it's not good to say things like I'm doing it right or it's working or not working, because those are like these judgments of the experience, or it was a good experience or a bad experience or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you're just judging it, which is unnecessary. So mm-hmm. you can get to being kind of neurotic about it and thinking, well, I just didn't do it right. Right. Or I didn't do it long enough or whatever. None of that matters.
No. And it looks a lot of different ways. You know what I mean? I think some people really access that space through movement.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
You know, movement, sound, you know.
Yeah. So that's part of what I was going to get at. And we went somewhere else. But is that you can probably you can have this experience. I mean, there's lots of different ways you can have this experience. You can probably have it with other people. Mm-hmm. You know, it actually helps, like you were talking about, the two of us practicing that with each other. Like, it helps me to enter a more contemplative or meditative space when I'm around you, because you're doing that too a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Not all the time. I don't know what you're doing, but you seem like you are. You seem like you are. It gets me into that space, especially if we're both maybe have intention to like have a more thoughtful interaction.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's probably easier to access that, you know, or at least I'll speak from my experience, right? It's been easier to access that when I'm around you, because I know, first of all, that that's a value to you. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to kind of enter into that space a number of different times, right? So mm-hmm. There's this experiential element of it where I just have that confidence, right? And essentially it's like it feels safe to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And my nervous system our nervous systems are always sensing that, mm-hmm. and can feel that, right? And so, you know, I wonder, you know, if the same thing's probably happening for you, is that you're there's a term called like neuroception, which is this, mm-hmm. it's this perception before it's even cognitive or conscious, right? Where your nervous system's sensing that energetically and just moving into that space. And it's not necessary, it doesn't require conscious or cognitive thinking or anything, you know?
Yeah.
It's just safety.
Yeah. Ah, you know if you're safe or not in another's presence.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're comfortable enough listening to your body, mm-hmm. you know. One way of saying is that, yeah, we always know. We could probably add to that and say, even though our body always knows that, that's not always consciously registered, because, you know, each one of us has a different relationship with our body and our nervous system. So
yeah, I told Brandy a week or two ago that I appreciate our friendship, because like I could just say, like, I don't have to say hi to you. I could just like jump right to my deepest thought. And it's usually like a text.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what do you think about, you know, what was it the other day? I sent you a text that was like, do you think that, it was something about like, do you think it's true that, you know, if you have something in spirit, that that's even better than having it?
Yeah.
Like
inform.
Inform.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was my text. Not good morning. How's lunch? How's your day going? Yeah. Like, and you're like right there with me.
Yeah. No icebreaker. I was driving.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I had stopped and saw the text. I didn't even register to me that, you know, because it's just such a natural way.
You were thinking about too.
I just immediately respond. You know what I mean? Because there was no.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was getting gas.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, listening to something that I was thinking about that, and then. Yeah, you like knew what I was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was helpful.
Yeah, and then I mean, it feels good, right? Like, mm-hmm. And that all comes from this sense of safety, really, that's been established, right?
Like, there you go. Yeah.
It throughout our relationship, but that's just this. That's the foundation and the framework for it all. And we, thankfully, right, have been able to kind of recognize that and allow that to flourish and grow and be the framework of our friendship, you know. And we've been able to consciously let that in, you know. Mm-hmm. Not that... That's a gift, right? Because, you know, sometimes that can feel scary, you know, to people for various reasons. But, you know.
Yeah, the safety thing is helpful. I think that's absolutely essential. Like, if we're going to change or heal, like we're talking about, it's going to be because we get into that kind of space where it, you know, you're not needing to like do your normal stuff that you do to like keep people far from you or impress people or, you know, keep them at bay with all your words or, you know, like you're getting, you feel safe enough to like do something different. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's why we can be relaxed around each other, right? Our nervous systems at this point, right, know that all of that other extra functioning that it might do throughout the day in other scenarios with other people is unnecessary. Mm-hmm. So it can really, in essence, just kind of like relieve itself of needing to do that and sink and enter into this other space, which is cool.
Yeah, which is kind of the space that we try to get people into, right? And where they feel sort of like they don't need to do that stuff anymore. You can do it through like hypnotherapy, or you can just do it by silence. You know, that's another way that you can do it. But another thing that that keeps happening to me is that people are like crying, you know, and then they're apologizing for it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I get that all the time.
And I always say, like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you feel, when your nervous system is, like, brought down to lower activation, lower sense of alert, then what do you know? There's some emotion there, right? Which we, like, never want to allow ourselves to experience, which is why we're doing all the things we're doing. We're just trying to avoid those emotions or whatever. And
yeah, you know, that can be a power. That's, you know, kind of goes back to what we're talking about, like this silence or presence, like in not only just therapy, but in relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you can do all kinds of talking, and I'm not saying it's not important or meaningful or anything like that, but you know, someone being in the presence of someone and, you know, being able to kind of hold this space and to where they feel safe enough to kind of let themselves relax enough to cry, mm-hmm. and to express and experience that and then, mm-hmm. you know, come out of it however and whenever they're ready. That experience, just the experiential element, is just as, if not more powerful than the words, than any words would be, right?
Yeah. That a lot of times the words are getting in the way. The words are really meant to keep the feelings at bay or to like explain them, synthesize them into some like communicable form. But like just crying or experiencing something really like pure mm-hmm. is better. it's more helpful or whatever. In the Mate book, he was talking about like how his healing just basically like came to him. It wasn't really something that he intended to do, mm-hmm. you know, which, you know, so that connecting kind of one of my earlier thoughts about like these, about my own suffering or whatever. And like, you know, later in life, after the college experience, I mean, I was like much older at this time, like twice as old almost, but, you know, like I had these griefs or whatever that hit me. And I say hit me because like when you experience grief, that it just kind of happens, and it happens to you for sure. Like waves of grief, like crash on you, and you can't do anything about it. All you can do is cry and scream and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, probably there are some things that can happen to us if we, I mean, those are times when you just can't do anything else but that.
Yeah.
Because it's just so powerful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Takes you over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like, if we can get ourselves into a deeper space or experience, you know, kind of punching through that membrane between conscious and subconscious, you know, I like to say relax, but really just kind of more like deeper, then some things might happen to you that need to happen, that won't happen if you just keep, if you never get into that state. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's part of the reason that we do therapy, because like doing that with somebody else who can provide that kind of space for you is actually sometimes easier than doing that for yourself.
Well, sure, because unfortunately, you know, in our society, there's not that space and that understanding and that context, right? Mm-hmm. In the therapy room, mm-hmm. it's understood that there is this space that can be entered into that is valuable and important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people will come into the therapy room and hopefully open up to that space with someone who's experienced in doing that, right? Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, like in our culture and our society, that space isn't really easily accessible,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It's not just not acceptable, but accessible, but unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? So
how is it unacceptable?
Well, I mean, you can think of it in, you know, it can be an unacceptable in, you know, a lot of different contexts, even unfortunately in relationships, right? Where, you know, if, I mean, mm-hmm. this is just the first idea that comes to my head, right? But if a man allows himself to be vulnerable and, you know, express deep emotion or grief to to his partner, who happens to be female, and she's not comfortable with that because of her own ideas of how she needs a man to be, right? Like, there's mm-hmm. an example of it right there. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, professionally, or a lot of different dimensions there. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to find those spaces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Our, you know, we find our, I mean, I find my way to, like, technology, activity, work, you know, we pick up our phones and, you know, there's plenty of media. But all these different things that we do that just sort of help us avoid silence, probably avoid some other things too, you know, mm-hmm. that are regulating to us, that are organizing our experience, right? We have organized ourselves in such a way in our environment, but what is needed for change and healing is really to become meta to those, to our own selves and our own way that we have organized ourselves.
Yeah, and that's probably, you know, one of the quickest ways to have a meaningful impact on our environment, right? Because our nervous systems are responding to our environment. If we can learn how to, in our own way, enter into the space that we're talking about, right, and kind of do this meta thing, there's also space that opens up to recontextualize our relationship to our environment, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of being this nervous system that is functioning, right, based off of its context or its environment, we've been able to kind of experiment or explore entering into this deeper space. Oftentimes in that deeper space, we can kind of get into a more meta space. That kind of changes the game there, and we can actually get to a place where we have an impact on the environment that has an impact on our nervous system.
Yeah.
It's a yeah. weird way of saying it, maybe, but
yeah, no, that, I think that's helpful to explain what we mean by meta. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can, you know, you can, sometimes when we think of being meta, it's like, you know, you're sort of floating out into the orbit, outside the orbit of the Earth or whatever, you know, and just having these sort of like existential thoughts, or, you know, like even just thinking about things in this very abstract way, mm-hmm. which is not exactly what we're talking about. It is getting outside of the normal experience we have, where we are just responding to our environment in the same way we always do. It's like becoming, like meta, a definition would be like becoming third party to, right? Which means that you kind of see that you're doing that. And if you slow down enough to just get outside of that response, then you can do something different. You can actually change.
Sure. Yeah.
Change your response in some, right? And it's not about just exchanging one set of responses for another. It's about actually like paying attention to the impulse that is driving that response, mm-hmm. which is probably fear a lot of times. You know, I mentioned that earlier, but if we're organizing ourselves in our environment in a way that we're always avoiding a certain grief or feeling, or, you know, trying to protect ourselves and stay safe, then, you know, a lot of times there's just kind of fear that's driving that. And so like getting into a more meditative experience, you can just step back and kind of notice that. Right. And then in safety, you have the ability to not be afraid, and you have a chance to like, just pay attention to what's happening there. You know?
Yeah.
You were talking about like maybe do something, like change something about your environment, or where are you going with that?
Well, not necessarily changing anything in your environment, right? But you know, you were talking about entering into the space to kind of explore and kind of renegotiate this nervous system experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I'm saying is that when someone is able to do that, I think that immediately translates to their ability to renegotiate and change their relationship to their larger context. Which does change the environment without really doing any specific action.
Oh yeah. Like not exerting their will on their environment. Yeah,
right.
It changes their relationship to their environment.
There you go.
Obviously that has an effect.
Yeah.
On the environment.
Which, you know, that translates into, you know, I think some big kind of, you know, collective shifts that could be good for us all, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think like just, you know, the things that we're sort of, the ways that we've organized ourselves in our environment are sort of like wearing us out maybe. But we just keep doing them because it's all we know how to do, you know? Maybe they're also making us sick, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, are you saying like life is going at such a fast pace, right? That so much of our energy is dedicated to keeping up with that we don't even have energy to like slow down so that we can change that.
Yeah. Well, I just
feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, like the things, the ways that we've kind of adapted to like keep ourselves regulated are, you know, not very efficient.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
And so they might be actually like, yeah, creating some fatigue, they may be wearing us down, they may be affecting like our immune systems and stuff like that, and affecting our muscle tension and all that kind of stuff, like all that stuff. And so, you know, it's good if we can slow down and like change, do something different, you know?
Yeah.
Retune our nervous systems to the environment in a different way. So that sense of resonance that I was talking about is also maybe what health feels like.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of feel like in harmony with your environment instead of just like, oh, it's wearing me out all day long, which is how it usually feels to me anyway.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Yeah, it takes your nervous system to acclimate to something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's associated fast, you know, fast, fragmented with safe, right? Mm-hmm. And so even if you are able to kind of consciously explore different ways that feel right, good, and true for you to slow your nervous system down, I'd be willing to bet that initially when you first start doing that, you can bet you're going to experience some resistance or some stress.
Yeah.
It's going to feel, that's going to create a stress response to your nervous system. Because it's like, whoa, wait, we've been 100 mile an hour train. Now we're going 50 and this feels a little unsafe and kind of chaotic, right?
Right.
So it takes a little bit of patience if you decide to kind of explore that space, because your nervous system might it's gonna be a little bit stressful for it.
Yeah. So you can practice meditation. Maybe, hopefully, you know, us practicing a little bit of contemplation with each other is helpful. And maybe try to get into some spaces where you can do that. So you could retune your nervous system.
Yeah. And then whoever's listening to us can give us their feedback on that. And also if they want us to do a silent podcast.
Silent.
We'll do the silent podcast, but in actuality we'll cheat. We'll just push play. Then we'll leave the room and go have donuts and talk a lot and, you know, totally cheat.
Right.
But then we'll come back in an hour.
Really nervous and
say, oh, we were here the whole time.
Quiet, contemplative. Right. Who knows what will happen in here while we're gone.
Right.
Probably hear everything that's going on in the parking lot.
Yeah, Joel's Norfolk Pine may have some words for you.
It probably will.
Yeah.
It's been waiting all this time to say something. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.